Hello and welcome to another episode of Ancient Warfare Answers. My name is Jasper Oorthuis. I'm the editor of Ancient Warfare magazine, and with me is Murray Dahm. He's the assistant editor. And today we are going to answer a question from one of our patrons, Josh. If you want to support us, go to patreon.com/ancientwarfarepodcast, where you can support us at various levels that include getting a digital or print copy of the magazine. You don't have to, and you can still submit questions such as the one that Josh did. How did Macedonian and Hellenistic phalanxes manage combat with more mobile cavalry armies such as Scythians, Sogdians, Medes, etc.? Murray.
Well, there we go. The phalanx again. The phalanx main role is obviously it presents to any enemy a vast number of spears from the time of Alexander, 9,000 sarissas poking out towards the enemy. So in the first instance, it's occupying space. And in all of his battles, Alexander pushes his phalanx forward first. So it's an imminent threat. It's a vast number of troops occupying ground and posing a threat. So the first thing that Alexander does is he uses his phalanx to be that threat. And what he then does is he fights a cavalry battle with his other troops, be it cavalry versus cavalry, or whether it be light armed troops and missile troops versus cavalry. And when you look at Alexander's battles, he will always tend to charge his right wing out towards the right, with the expectation that the enemy left wing, the Persian left wing, will try and match that maneuver. And so what happens at both, at all three battles, Granicus, Gaugamela, and Issus, is that a gap appears, or enough of a gap appears, in the Persian left wing for Alexander to be able to take advantage of it. And he then charges home through that gap, followed by the infantry, and then they defeat the Persians by breaking their formation, and of course having Darius flee from the battlefield, which never helps. So the interesting thing there is that the phalanx as such is not necessarily intended to fight cavalry, certainly not front on. And so the enemy cavalry are trying to maneuver and get around the flanks and into the rear of the phalanx. At the Battle of Gaugamela, we know that the phalanx is at the front of the formation, and then Alexander pulls the wings of the rest of his army back, so it's almost like an upside-down U heading towards the Persians, so that that they can't outflank him. You know, he uses a second reserve phalanx to be behind his primary phalanx, so if there is an envelopment, he's actually got troops there who are able to deal with that. So in many ways, the phalanx is recognized as being vulnerable on the flanks, and you need to protect them, either with cavalry or infantry who don't move from that spot to protect the phalanx. In the later Hellenistic era, the same thing happens. And we had another earlier episode where, you know, Pyrrhus is supposed to have experimented with putting light armed troops between the units of his phalanx. And in several later battles, you find that on the flanks of the phalanx, whereas Alexander used hypaspists, so heavy infantry themselves, later Hellenistic commanders seem to use light armed troops. So you find Cretan archers, for instance, mercenary Cretan archers stationed on the one of the flanks of the phalanx, and other light armed troops. So they are able to throw missiles and deter any kind of outflanking attack, but the phalanx itself is able to move forward, obviously is relatively inexorable in terms of its movement forward, that if it decides to move forward, it will succeed in that simply through the number of men and the number of spear points they can bring to bear. And, you know, when you look at some of the battles like the Hydaspes, it's the infantry is simply meant to occupy space whilst the decisive part of the battle is fought around them, generally by cavalry under Alexander, led by Alexander himself at the front of the rhombus formation. So it's very much a formation that's meant to to perform a function on the battlefield of holding the line, and then the battle will be won by heavy cavalry delivering a charge to the enemy, either into the flank of its own phalanx later, or to drive the enemy cavalry or the enemy commander off the field. So it's a remarkable unit. I mean, obviously at the Battle of Gaugamela, we have the specially prepared terrain that Darius prepares. And, you know, we find that there are chariots that are going to come against the Greek phalanx. And only in one of the sources do we get this idea that the phalanx has ways of dealing with the chariots. In some of the other sources, the chariots are mentioned in the deployment, and then we never hear the chariots again. But in one of the sources, of course, we get the idea that the syntagmas of the phalanx, the units of the phalanx, either separate and create corridors within it so that they can defeat the chariots one by one, or that they gather even closer together and basically make the chariots run against even more spears, so like a close order array. And so possibly in other sort of fights with cavalry foes, those sorts of things could do. One of the most famous aspects of cavalry, of course, is that they won't charge what they deem to be a solid object. And so as long as the phalanx maintains its cohesion, it's going to be an impregnable wall of spears for a frontal assault. As long as the flank guards are in place, they too will allow the phalanx to operate and occupy space by not allowing the flanks to be vulnerable to cavalry. And, you know, pretty much a matter of managing your time to make sure that your guys deliver the victory before their guys deliver the victory. So it's a really fascinating development of a group of spearmen who are, you know, basically standing in danger, moving forward, fighting other infantry, absolutely, but very much being the elephant in the room, for lack of a better phrase, that they are, you know, this imminent threat in the middle of a battlefield, 9,000 of them, and they are the threat you must deal with. And so what you find in several of the battles is, of course, that the enemy does try and eliminate the threat of the phalanx, when in fact they might have done better to ignore the phalanx and try and eliminate the other aspects of the army, whether it be the cavalry or the flank guards. So it's a remarkable tool in that regard, because it's able to occupy the space and do that role remarkably well. And later on, what you find, as we've touched on before as well, is the fact that you have phalanx versus phalanx, which is very much a very kind of even tussle and a sort of a pushing of, well, in a later era of warfare, they'll talk about the push of pike. But, you know, that you've got phalanx versus phalanx, nothing's going anywhere. And so, again, they sort of eliminate one another from a battlefield sort of equation until one of them's cavalry or flank guards are defeated, and then the enemy cavalry will charge the vulnerable flank of that phalanx. So, in a way, it's very simple. And, you know, all of the battles that they're in are
just get rid of the flank guard and the cavalry, yeah. So, but the real answer, so it really is, it's combined, yep, arms, because the phalanx is never just by
exactly,
itself.
Exactly right. And the phalanx is meant as a battlefield tool to work with cavalry. You know, that's definitely the way that Alexander operates it. And there is an amazing combined arms in terms of not just cavalry and phalanx, but you've got light arm troops, missile troops, and, you know, light and heavy cavalry, which all operate together when led properly. So it's quite a remarkable machine.
All right. Thank you. See you next time.
There you go. Thanks, Josh.